Dr. John Hope Franklin is with us here on the Paula Gordon Show. Our great honor, you have had many honors. You honor us with your presence. The Presidential Medal of Freedom, which was given to you, which is the highest civilian medal given to an American, is one of the many, many things that America has honored you with and for. Bill Russell, let's talk about the media part of this, if you would, to think about, for all of those honors, for being an esteemed and beloved part of the American experience for 90 years, the media stranglehold is an important part of this story.
I was surprised at how many times events that you were directly involved in were misreported, and that major American newspapers, including the New York Times specifically, not only misreported or just got it dead wrong, but refuse either to correct it or to even print your letters in response. I don't know how to account for that, other than malice.
Well, I'm glad you made reference to that, because I was referring to that when I said I learned a great deal. And I learned that if you don't have your own press, there is no such thing as a free press. We talk about a lot about our free press and that sort of thing. But they print what they please. What they don't want to print, they don't. I don't care if it's true or not. They won't even print the results of a football game if they don't like the way the football game came out, for some reason, if they have some objection to it. So that's what we have to remember, that a press, I use the word press, but I meant radio, television, all the other things.
And the
means
internet.
Of communication. They do what they want to about the news. They manipulate the news. They control the news. Let me give you an example. You mentioned the New York Times. Well, the New York Times, great newspaper that it is, and resourceful newspaper that it is the only newspaper that had the resources to assign a reporter to follow us all exclusively. That is, to give him full rein. Wherever we went, he would go.
As the presidential commission.
Yes. Wherever the report, wherever the president's advisory board would go, he would be there. Now, maybe the Atlanta Journal could afford that, but it didn't. Its priorities were somewhere else. But the Times could afford it, and that young man was there whenever we met. Now, that didn't mean, though, that because he was there, that he paid attention. I could look out sometimes and see him talking on his cell phone when we are reaching some very important decision, or that he's out of the room, or that sort of thing. Well, that's his prerogative, but the point is that he was not necessarily a diligent reporter because he had been assigned to do that.
Or because he was from the New York Times.
Yes. So that once, let's say, when we were meeting in New York, we were meeting in Washington at the Mayflower Hotel, and both the President of the United States and the Vice President of the United States came to the meeting, and we had a lively, wonderful discussion about the matter of race and where it was important to explore and where it was important to take some position. We decided that say, a school like a school in Fairfax County, Virginia, was a school that deserved our attention because they had so many young people from so many different parts of the world, say nothing of the state, of the country, attending that school. There were more than 50 languages represented in that school. And we thought that was good, and we decided to have our meeting at that school so we could get acquainted with the problems related to serving and solving problems where you've got a mixture of tongues, the way they had in Fairfax County, Virginia. We thought that was wonderful. What did the newspaper say? The newspaper said that the advisory board was so confused and so uncertain about what it should do that the President of the United States and the Vice President both had to come and get us straighten us out. to get us on track, since we were wandering in the wilderness, so to speak, since we didn't know what we were doing. Well, that came as a great blow. When we thought we had reached a certain pinnacle, we had a wonderful time. The president and the vice president were enjoying it and were contributing, participating in the discussion. That the best that could be said was that we were foundering and floundering and did not know what to do.
The reason this is such an important story for me is the requirement that we must be skeptical, that we must be looking at our mass media, which is so pervasive, whether it's television, radio, advertising, that we must cultivate a sense of, is this true? Of looking at the story saying, you know, maybe it isn't true, it isn't wrong, he was on vacation and made it up. The skepticism that is required. Now, it takes more work, but isn't that part, Dr. John Hope Franklin, of being a democracy? Isn't that what we have to do, is to be skeptical, to be critical in the best sense of the word, to not simply take what the political leaders say or anybody else without having used our brains for a good critical analysis?
Not merely to be skeptical, but to refrain from making up things just because you want to fill in the pages or something. I remember so well, if that didn't shock me, what they had done in distorting what happened in Fairfax County, Virginia. Another thing that was made up out of whole cloth was as distressing to me. And that is the newspaper that said that John Hope Franklin has never had a face-to-face conversation with the President of the United States. And when I was with President Clinton last week and repeated that, he almost fell off his chair. He said, someone said that? I said, yes, it was published in one of the leading newspapers of this country that you and I had never had a conversation with each other, not face-to-face. He said, what did we do on Air Force One the whole time we were riding around the country? I said, you ask them, what did we do? They know that we didn't do anything, that I never saw you, and so forth.
But they didn't
made
know.
Up things. Yeah. It's made up things out of whole cloth.
Well, part of the lesson in this, the skepticism, is, I mean, that's where education comes in so handy.
Yes.
It's much better, easier to be skeptical and questioning if you've got a broad background from which to raise those questions.
And that doesn't just apply to the schools at the new schools at Carver and students who are sitting before us. That is required of all of us. All the time. Isn't that right?
Right, right.
It isn't just scholars who have to be doing that work, is it?
It's all of us. The lesson that we learned is that the most humble of us, the most uninformed of us, can at least raise our eyebrows, can at least raise some question, can at least challenge people to say, now, how do you prove that? How do you know that? Did you see it? Did you hear it? Do you know that Franklin and Clinton never talked to each other? You know that? Perhaps if you just raise that question. You don't have to know the answer necessarily, but if you raise the question, that's a question that requires an answer. And the answer would be maybe a revelation.
You said earlier, I mean, on the subject of the New York Times and coverage of this, that many of the institutions, New York Times had the resources, maybe others didn't. The fact is, broadcast television is one of the most profitable industries in the world.
That would be profitable.
Local stations, networks, they're extraordinarily profitable. Most newspapers are still, for all the readership has dropped off, are profitable. It's a question of where you choose to apply those resources.
Yes.
And again, part of what all of us can do is, how to say this gracefully, raise hell with the media. Ask those questions. You know, if something is not being covered.
That's how you know you're in school. If something is not being covered.
If something is not being covered, or if you know things, or if you just question it, don't hesitate to call the editor, write the editor, send the email, to the radio station, television station, whatever.
I worry about the passivity that keeps being sort of shoved down our throats. Is that...
Yes.
Are we on the right track here?
You're really on the right track. You have to, as Bill says, you've got to call the media to account. You've got to raise questions with them. Now, that doesn't always succeed either. For I wrote to the editor of the New York Times more times than I can remember. I wrote to the editor of the Chicago Tribune more times than I can remember. I wrote to other editors. Not only did they not publish any of the letters that I wrote while I was chair of the President's Advisory Board on Race, they did not even answer my letters to me and tell me why they would not publish or print my letters. So that you can't always be certain that that will do, but you have to
try.
Give it
you
your
have
best
to be greaser if you don't.
And that's why I used to say that the only free press is one you own yourself. that's the only one that's really truly free, and you are free then to put a print what you want to in there.
Well, and perhaps that we can say that the internet and the Velvet Revolution in Europe with the fax machines, that people took that to heart and found a way to have a free press that wasn't owned by mass media conglomerates. This is, with our great honor, Dr. John Hope Franklin. We are at the New Schools at Carver in Atlanta, Georgia. We'll all be back for a couple more minutes when we return.